Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're darn tootin', Pete. Thank you. We agree. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday morning. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. What a weekend for our next guest. Rick Bird, longtime Belmont Bruins men's basketball coach, is on the line with us and probably not enjoying doing what he's been doing. He's been on the circuit talking about Rick Bird, and that's not exactly how Rick likes to operate. But, hey, when you get an honor like that, we're going to ask you to do it. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, guys. I figure this is the last time anybody's going to care what I say about anything, so I might as well go ahead and do the interview, right?
I don't believe that, but I did think about you when the news came out on Sunday, and I was like, wow, that's such a cool honor. But now Rick is going to have to get really uncomfortable and talk about himself for a while this week. And so, man, what an honor. What did it mean to you?
I'd have to really pull out a lot of false humility to say that it was just another day. It's, you know, college basketball is all I ever did and wanted to do, and I don't even know that I ever dreamed about being in a National Basketball Hall of Fame of any kind at any point. So it is a dream come true, even if I didn't. And it's, what it does is it makes you appreciate all the people that helped you get where you are, starting from mom and dad to all the way through your family now and all the people in between. That's the good part. When you get a nice text or email, you can tell that person how much you appreciate what they've meant to you.
Well, what did mom and dad do, Rick?
Like any parents, they got me there. They were interested in what I was doing. They let me make choices about what sports I wanted to play or didn't want to play. But they cared. They were there. You know, my dad was a sports writer, and so he had a natural interest, but he was the perfect parent, little league parent, bitty league basketball parent, high school parent. He never did anything but support the coach and the people that I was playing for, and didn't let me whine or complain, didn't yell at the referees, that kind of stuff. So, he was a really humble man, and just wanted what was best for me, and wanted to give me the chance to make that decision and my choices.
That's great. When you first took the post, what was your mindset going in back at the beginning days? And then the follow-up to that is, when did you know, because we always ask this of players, like, when did you know, like, I got this, like, I can handle this, I understand how this works and what I need to do to be successful. How would you answer that?
Well, your first part of the question, when I took the post, meaning at Belmont or just mm-hmm. my first
yeah,
job?
Let's go with Belmont. Like, when you walked into that job, what did you think you were signing up for?
Well, I knew I was signing up for our rival a couple of miles down the road were the NAIA national champions, and so that the bar was pretty high. And yet, as I have said many, many times over the years, Lipscomb, whether they like it or not, deserves a ton of credit for Belmont's basketball success, because let's just say that they and Trevecca, and Trevecca was very, very good at the time, and NAIA had been NAIA programs, then, I wouldn't have got pushed. I just wouldn't have been pushed to get as good as we got. So that's, I thought when I came here, I thought Belmont was a, had great potential as an institution. It was gaining enrollment every year when a lot of smaller colleges were not. It was in a great city that was growing. Who knew how much it was going to grow? And I just saw a lot of potential. But all I saw was an NAIA program. I certainly didn't see, I certainly didn't see beating North Carolina or UCLA one day when I came here. And I'm not a big goal setting guy. I'm just more of a day to day. Let's do the best we can here and see where that takes us. And it's kind of what myself and our staff did throughout the years. I don't know about your second question's an interesting one. I don't think I ever felt like I've got this.
Really?
I think that's healthy. There's different thoughts about going into games, and some people would say you've got to really believe you're going to win this game, and you've got to tell your players you really believe you're going to win this game, and they've got to see that. And I was almost the opposite as a coach. I saw all the ways we could lose it. Now, I'm not saying I told the team that, but I told them plenty. If we don't do this, this is what they'll do. And no matter how bad they were, I could find ways to make our guys understand if we don't do things right, we're going to get beat. And sometimes you did get beat by people you shouldn't lose to. But I'm not saying I didn't get to the point where I thought I belonged in the profession I was in. I know better than anybody, except maybe my assistant coaches, what my limitations are as a basketball coach. And so you get there and you start thinking you've got it, and that means you really don't. You don't have it.
That's interesting. Rick Bird on the line with us, going to be put in the College Basketball Hall of Fame, part of the 2021 class. We were actually talking about that. We've talked about it a lot on the show today, just what drives competitors, what drives coaches, what drives players, what's that motivating, what keeps them going, what keeps those competitive juices going. And I'd like to go there with you, because you kind of were starting to touch on that. So if you didn't really have that moment where you said, I got this, I know how I can make this work, how my style, this style, will be successful, then what was it over the years? Like, what was keeping your internal flame going, your competitive juices always going for decades?
I think that's born into you, frankly. I don't, that's probably not entirely fair. I mean, I think you learn things from people you're around about this is the way you do things. And my dad, for example, was no taskmaster. He wasn't, actually. He was probably a little bit off, but I could see how hard he worked. I could see his value set. And for some reason, I just never, I didn't want to do anything halfway. I didn't want to leave stones unturned. I just think if you've got a job to do, you do it as good as you can do it. And I don't think that's heroic. If you may not want to get in the car and drive to Atlanta to watch a kid play high school basketball game, but you do it, you make that 7-hour or 8-hour round trip, because if you start thinking you don't need to do that, or you shouldn't do this, or that's too hard, then that's just going to bleed over into everything else you do. I don't know. There's just you're either competitive and driven for whatever reason, or you're not. And I think I was driven. You're asking me to be a psychologist or psychiatrist or something. I'm not.
Deep well, questions today.
I was like,
these
yeah,
are
well.
Hard questions. These are hard questions. Usually you don't ask hard questions.
Well, this is quite an honor and well deserved. I just want to pick the brain of a Hall of Fame coach. That's all. I'm just trying to learn from this interview.
Well, and so far it's pretty disappointing, isn't it?
Not at all. So I'm going to ask you, this is going to be the last one, and then I'm going to get out of the way. if you could change one thing besides the obvious, the outcome, and go back and do that, coach that Duke game over, would you change? What would you change? Like I said, other than the obvious, you win rather than lose by a point. What would you have done differently?
There's probably a little. there's probably one thing leads to another that I would change. I certainly would do a better job on the baseline out of bounds play, and we had a chance to take the lead late, and we just really messed it up and threw a little lob pass that people in the wrong spots. We called it without calling a timeout. And then Alex Renfro, our guard, had a great game that game, and we had a 1-point lead with about 45 seconds to go, and we tried to do a little screen and roll for him, but we didn't clear the side out, and our defender's man, our player rose out of the corner and brought his man into Alex's way. He had to reduce field, take a tough shot. We got a bad shot out of that. I don't know. I think about that game a lot. probably gets more disappointing the years that go on, because, you know, even though we lost it, it was quite an almost euphoric feeling to experience that night and to get the credit that we did get for playing Duke to 1 point. But so, you know, in a way it didn't hurt as much as maybe people might think at that moment, but it hurts more now than it did then.
That's such an interesting answer, because I think all competitors probably feel that way. Like, the more removed, you can always think back to those kind of games, no matter what sport you play. We're talking to Rick Bird. He's going to be inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame in the class of 2021. Coach, you've mentioned your dad a few times, and as you alluded to, he was a sports writer. So I'm curious, can you remember the first basketball game that he took you to, like when maybe the light went on for you, when you started to get a connection to the game?
No, I can't remember the first game. I'm sure I tagged along with him, maybe even some University of Tennessee practices when I was really young. What I do remember, and it's, you know, story's been told, so you can stop me if you want to, but as a real young guy, I mean, I hope I was even old enough to make change, but I sold programs. Probably eight, 9 years old at the Tennessee basketball games, and when they blew the buzzer to start the game, I could quit selling programs because, you know, the game started. People don't want them anymore. They were 25 cents, and I went and sat down right underneath his feet underneath the press table. No fancy press table, just tables at that time, And I've got Coach Mears at UT about 10, 12 feet to my right, and maybe Adolph Rupp down on the other end, and I'm that close to the action at that high level of basketball, and kind of wonder what else could I have wanted to do after getting to do that.
You know, there's a lot of coaches where you say, well, this guy coached under Dean Smith for a long time, or Rick Pitino, or Denny Crum, whoever you want to name. So who were the influences for you? I mean, you came up with your own system. I don't know.
Yep.
I mean, there's certainly no family tree that you're coming off of. So who were the influences that helped shape some of your concepts?
Well, it was the people that I competed against. You're right. I didn't. I mean, I was a student assistant coach at Tennessee under Coach Mears, and that's the only offense I knew when I was first a head coach. But as I was 25 years old when I was a head coach at Maryville College, and you know, I just shudder to think how little I knew at that point. If you think I don't think I got it now, you should have seen me then. But it's the people that I coached against, and I can name a bunch of them to you right now. When I was at Lincoln Memorial University, we played Randy Vernon in Cumberland College in Williamsburg, Kentucky, and nobody knows how good a coach he was. And then when I came here, you know, I've got to compete against Don Meyer. And he he's legendary for a reason. I mean, you talk about a guy who did get it and knew it. And that was everything he did in his life was learn teaching basketball. And his 4-out-1 in offense is what we adopted when Joe Bayling in my second year became a good enough player to be our 1-in. And, you know, you've got Scott Corley and Scott Speedy and other guys around him that can shoot threes. And that's the way we played almost the rest of my coaching career. And we played it some differently than what Don does, and Casey plays it some differently than what I did, but it's still the same approach. And so, you know, you just really, you're right, you're exactly right, and I've thought about that a lot. They're, you know, Coach Krzyzewski's got a bunch of guys out there coaching. But I was an assistant for Tom Beaton at Tennessee Tech for 3 years before I went to LMU. And so I just pretty much learned it watching, scouting. You know, this, they do this. That's great. That's a great way to play. That's a great way to guard this. That's a good action to run, all that kind of stuff. Just cheating and stealing stuff from people.
Rick Bird is with us a long time.
Cheating might not be a good word. I
copying? Yeah. Just pilfering?
Stealing,
I don't know.
Stealing is okay. Stealing is okay.
Rick Bird is with us, the Hall of Famer, longtime Belmont basketball coach. And when I say long time, you were there for over 30 years. And I've always been curious of, you know, whether it's you or, you know, Coach K, another coach that has been in one place for that long, of did you ever realize just how difficult that is? And especially as the environment changes as we go of, you know, recruiting and the kids changing, and you obviously have to have success and the allure of other jobs, of just what kind of an accomplishment that was to be at one place for as long as you were. Did you think about that at all when you retired, or do you still think about that, of just how difficult it is?
Well, I can see how unusual it is. It wasn't difficult for me. Difficult wouldn't be the word, because I was, as soon as I got here, I was I loved the people that I worked with. I loved the school and what it stood for. It was my privilege to try to bring a basketball program that exemplified the standards that the school had and represented it in a first-class way. And, a lot of other things have to fall in place that, you know, you've got to be successful. And we of course, went from NAIA to Division I, and there were honestly very few people that survived, very few coaches over the years that survived that particular move, and Belmont stuck with us through some 3 or 4 tough years. And then we did have success, but I never wanted to go anywhere else. You know, there are financial reasons that you might think about it, but I quit worrying about climbing the ladder of levels, you know, in the first decade I was at Belmont, because I loved the school, the people, the players I got to recruit, and loved the city of Nashville.
So I was on vacation last week, watched a lot of movies. Blue Chips was one of them. And at the very, I know,
Randall. You had to go pretty low. I mean, you must have really been searching.
I know, I was watching
to
that too.
That one.
It was,
That
I was
is not
scrolling
one of the all-time
through.
Greats.
It's not, but I was scrolling through and it was on and I started watching it. But the very end of the movie, when, you know, he quits and he walks out and he goes to the court where the kids are playing, and he walks on the court and he starts teaching. That's kind of what inspired this question. Was that your favorite part of coaching? Was just the practice time and the one-on-one with the player and just teaching the fundamentals of the game of basketball?
Or was it doing interviews with the media? Which one did you enjoy more?
Really, this moment right here.
You're on the couch. This is a deep dive into the soul of Rick Bird right now.
I think that's close. I think I would put it more just simply the what I miss and what I enjoyed the most, particularly as you do it longer and get older and reflect on things, or the relationships with the players that you had and the opportunity to see them. I mean, they grow up in front of you, and part of your job, and in fact, I think a big part of your job as a coach in college is to be part of their education and help them end up being better people by the way you go about operating your business. So I miss that, as well as the people on my staff and the people I worked with daily in the athletic staff. Those were really my favorite parts of it. I think as a coach, whatever little gift that I did have was just trying to figure out ways to win. Strategy of the game is, and every game has it, is fascinating to me. And, you know, I can watch a football game and see why pass routes work and that kind of stuff, and see when there's a great play call. And baseball's got tons of strategy in it. So I like to figure, and so that brought me to be more of an offensive coach. I loved trying to figure out how we could score against that particular defense.
I on the way out, I have to believe another thing that was interesting in your approach year after year is when you built the foundation and everybody came to expect a certain level, and you know how difficult that is to do year in and year out, right? Things happen throughout the course of a season. Rosters turn over and different kids come in and there's a different room, and it's not easy to do, but for you to keep it at that level, I have to believe that that had to weigh on you as well, right? Trying to live up to the standards when you thought of Belmont basketball and Rick Byrd. You know, everybody thought, well, you better be flirting with 30 wins every year. Well, this just in. That's not easy to do.
Well, you're right about that. A lot of people would look at you and say, well, you know, what about the guy who's losing? He's worried about losing his job. That's a whole lot worse. And I would get that. But there's you can create pressure in a lot of different ways. I think one of the things that I actually enjoyed the most about my time at Belmont was the period when we went from NAIA to Division One, and even though for that 5-year period we would have a losing record, it was back to trying to figure out how to win games instead of not lose games. It's not as much fun in a lot of ways to know that you're trying not to lose, and that may seem, I don't know if that. Anybody can understand that or not, but when you have been fortunate enough to have year in, year out of success, that's kind of what you're thinking about. But I also I appreciate that, because I think you're right, and I think if I was allowed to pick one thing that I thought our program did the best, it was the consistency within our level of basketball. I think since 2004 we had one year and we finished third, and every other year in the conference we were in, we finished first or second. And I think any coach would say that the consistency of success would be the biggest point of pride.
Well, we enjoyed it. I don't know if you enjoyed it, Rick, because you weren't talking about your players. You were having to talk about you. But we enjoyed it, if that makes you feel any better.
What was more unexpected, Darren playing psychiatrist or a Blue Chips reference?
Well, I was lost on the Blue Chips reference. I watch Netflix now, and I haven't seen it on there.
Yeah, it's a thoroughly forgettable movie. There's no question about it.
Rick, well-deserved. Could not be happier for you. It's quite an honor. Soak it up, and we will talk to you down the road. We are not going to go away. Yes, we are. We're going to talk to you. Yeah, we will. We will reach out, and hope you'll sign up to do this again, even after this interview.
I will.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, bye-bye.
Rick Byrd.
Guys, I do have a trivia question from Blue Chips, though.
Okay.
Okay? Because that was my era. Okay, 1994 is the movie. Yep. By the way, what a spectacular interview that was for Coach
Burke. That was awesome.
That was a great interview. And even the reference to the movie Blue Chips did not throw us off the rails. That was great stuff. But it got me thinking. Here's the trivia question. I think I have a good trivia question right
Who
here.
Who was Ed O'Neill in that interview we just did?
It's a good question.
Good question.
Because he played Ed. That was his name.
Yeah, Ed, when are you going to let this crap go?
Ed O'Neill. Okay.
Al Bundy.
So, do you remember, now, if you just watched it, Chase, maybe you can remember, but the three key recruits that, you know, this is a movie, for people that have no idea, haven't seen this movie, I don't blame you, but Nick Nolte is the basketball coach who decides he's gonna cheat, he's going to do whatever he has to do for one last hurrah to get the best players. So he recruits three star players, and do you remember the names of them?
Ricky was the one with the tractor, right?
Ricky, boy? Ricky Rowe.
Ricky Rowe was the kid from Indiana, right? Was
yeah,
he
right.
from Indiana?
Well, I believe so, yes. And then Penny Hardaway is played, yeah. His character's name is?
Wasn't there a Tony?
No.
No, there was not. Tony was the kid that was already on his team.
Okay. Butch McRae is the name of Penny Hardaway.
Butch McRae.
And the third record is Shaq.
Shaq was Neon.
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 Yeah. Neon.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's the trivia question. For me, because of the era that I played in for Vanderbilt, I played multiple college basketball games against Neon, Butch McRae, and Ricky Rowe. That's good trivia right there.
How about that?
Matt
wow.
No, the guy that played Ricky Rowe, his name is Matt Nover. He played for – we just talked about Matt Nover with Dan Dokich the other day.
Oh, Darren. So did I just make that up because – okay, so he maybe the character in the movie wasn't from Indiana?
Well, he might have been from Indiana. I don't
okay.
know. They got him a tractor, right? That's
they
the
got
thing.
Him
they,
a cheat.
They got him a tractor so he would sign with Nick Nolte's team. So Matt Nover, who played at Indiana, good, solid player. Penny Hardaway – at Memphis, we played a couple games against him. And, of course, Shaq at LSU. So this is my era. Maybe I should give this movie another try.
You
I remember watching it at the time going, what the heck?
It wasn't like a bad movie.
You had cameos from Rick Pitino, yep. Bobby Knight.
Oh, yeah. Bobby Hurley's in it.
Bobby Hurley, Jerry Tarkanian.
Dick Vitale.
Jim Boeheim, wasn't he in that?
Yeah.
I don't see Jim Boeheim on the list of credits here.
Kevin
oh, no, you're right. You're right. He is in there.
Kevin Garnett was a player, right?
Yeah.
That
What's
played
funny,
against.
What I thought about, because the whole point of what the whole
Alan Houston.
Wasn't Al, I was going to say,
yeah,
wasn't
Houston
Alan
was
Houston,
in,
Houston
yeah.
in there?
There's another guy I played a bunch of games against. He's my year. See, these are all the guys that are from, you know, within a year of my high school class. So this is maybe I should have been in there.
The
that
thing that
great.
Was, yeah.
Like, could have been like a. A guy coming off the bench for Bobby Knight's team.
Well, you had a hair.
Didn't Bobby sure. Hurley? Didn't Bobby Hurley play for Indiana? In the
well,
movie?
Well,
in
was
the movie?
It that they weren't called? It wasn't Indiana. Wasn't it like Western?
Yeah.
Oh, is that what
Western
it was?
Western University, right?
But they was played it? Indiana. They
no,
did.
No, they played Indiana. Bobby yeah. Hurley was on the Indiana team.
Yeah, he was.
And so was Joe Hillman and Greg Graham, two other of Bobby Knight's players.
Oh, you're right. You're
Calvert
right.
Chaney.
Right. They
Calvert Chaney,
the
Eric Anderson.
Oh, right.
See, they had, like, the real players from Indiana.
That's right.
Keith Smart was on the Indiana team in the movie.
But the funny thing about it was because of the whole premise of the movie, and then they show Rick Pitino. I'm like, man, this is just ironic. This is irony at its best in the mid-90s of yeah. just the some of the coaches, but Pitino being one of them. So, yeah,
I would have loved to have been a cameo guy just in a movie, in like a baseball movie, just a person, you know, not even a character with any lines, just being in a game.
Willie,
a
I could see you.
That
I could
be
see
so
you
much
in,
fun.
I could see you in like Major League 4.
Well, you know, but you know what makes a good movie for me, honestly, when you're seeing a sports movie, it really disappoints me when the actual plays don't look good. Right, it can ruin the movie sometimes. Right, if the actors
it just looks fake.
Right, so you
Willie,
want the plays?
Are you really
going to
go
good?
There? Then why do you talk about Rocky? So I mean, come on, give me a break. Like Rocky was like the worst boxing ever. You don't hold that
come
against
on,
Rocky,
man. Are you
Willie,
me?
Give me awesome. A stop it.
Come on. I love the
you
boxing.
Stop that.
I wish you, boxing was like that.
Oh, my gosh. That was the worst
was
boxing
awesome.
Ever.
No, the worst boxing ever was
first of all,
last
they missed,
Saturday night. But.
They missed by a foot every swing, and they would just come out swinging
right, and
away.
Sound effects. Did you still hear the sound
I mean,
effects?
Come on.
Yeah.
Like 300 blows in a yeah, right. Like you take that many punches in a boxing match. I mean, come on. If you're really going to hold that standard, then I don't want you to ever reference
right.
Rocky again.
But okay, but in Blue Chips, let's give them that. They actually did get really good players to play the games.
Sure.
So
they got actual players.
It looked good, yeah.
Actual
the
coaches.
The basketball looked good. There's some other movies where it doesn't look so good. Like Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf?
Michael, Teen Wolf.
What now happened? We have a Teen Wolf?
What happened to Chase? You know what? This is your fault. I'm blaming you now.
Do we have a prize? Can we play trivia later in the show? What were the two obscure movies that were brought up on the show today?
Yeah.
You can name that.
To find out who's still listening.
Teen Wolf. Blue Jay. Well, you said you watched it, too. I mean, it was like 11 o'clock at
no,
night or
I
something did.
Like that. I
haven't seen it, since it came out. I remember when it first came out, I was like, okay, I'll give it a try. And I was like, this is over the top. It's just way over the top.
I think you should watch it again. It's not a great movie.
Wait a minute.
But
why
it's not
is
a
it
bad
over
movie.
Why is it over the top?
Well, just it's so cliche, you know, with the cheating.
You mean because it played out in college basketball?
Maybe it was over the top at the time. Now it's like,
right.
Oh, it's a biography.
Well, I was going to say,
it was ahead of its time.
I was going to say, exactly. They should get credit for being a – I mean, come on. Are you kidding?
Do we think that these coaches saw Blue Chips and go, hey, that's not a bad idea. Hey, can we go get this kid a car?
Right, and no coach ever grabbed a basketball and kicked it in the stands, right? Only Nick Nolte? Oh, wait a minute.
You think Rick Pitino might have, like, written parts of the movie, too? Like, they had some coaches, like, help write it and produce it?
This is
it?
What I would do.
If I was to cheat, this would be how we do it.
I would have strippers on the recruiting trail. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be the 2020 version of Blue Chips. They'd put the strippers in there.
Yeah. I mean.
Good stuff. We have now hijacked our show with
I was just saying, I don't think it's that over the top because I think we've learned.
It's true.
But when was that movie? Back in the early 90s?
1994.
Yeah, 94.
Yeah. 94, I think Elijah just said it. They may have been way ahead of their time. Today, I don't think anybody would be surprised by a movie like that about college basketball. I mean, come on. Oh, like, by the way, you think there's ever been a conversation in a gym between a coach and an AD like that? We gotta get players.
Happy.
Look, I just don't wanna hear. Just don't tell. I don't wanna know anything. Like you think that's ever happened?
Never.
Never. Speaking of college basketball, Gonzaga and Baylor will be going toe to toe for what could be the nation's top ranking in college basketball. By the way, a lot of blue bloods going tonight, right? Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan State, and Duke. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving all college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win this big clash of the Titans in the college basketball world. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up and using the promo code 1025GAME. All you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you'll have your shot to turn $1 into $100 when betting on either Gonzaga or Baylor to win the game. That code again, 1025GAME, during sign-up for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only, bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.